Hello and welcome to True Romance. This is Carolina Barlow.
And this is Devin Leary.
Devin, tell the listeners what you just told me.
I told you that I had a dream about you a couple nights ago.
Go on.
And I know you're saying go on, but I think you might not be saying that.
Oh no.
By the end of it. But it was so fun. The reason I just have to say out of the gate, the reason why it was so funny is because it was so far from reality that even in the dream, I was like, wait, like, is this a dream? Because this would never happen. But basically, I've been having recurring COVID nightmares, which is nightmares where I do something where I could have become infected. And then I, like, in the dream, it's the same thing as like the naked dream where you're like, oh, my God, and I'm naked. It's like, I'm like, oh, my God, I just got infected. You know, one was that I went to a crowded public place and touched a bunch of stuff and then ate a sandwich without washing my hands. But the other night, my dream was that I was at your house. Okay. So Nora and your mom were there, your sister Nora and your mom, Denise. And we're all hanging out, normal, beautiful house. You guys had like a pond behind your house, it was very beautiful. Oh. And then I said, okay, so now we're going to go to my house, right, and hang out? And you had a very cold response to that. And you said, no, I don't want to go hang out with your wolf dog, meaning my dog, Eddie, that looks like, actually looks exactly like one of your dogs, and they both kind of look like a wolf. So you were protesting that you did not want to hang out with my dog, Eddie. So that was where in the dream I was like, okay, like, what? This is so, like, not like Carolina. She also has a wolf dog. Why would she not want to hang out with my wolf dog? This is so weird. And then basically I left and your mom was upset. Your mom was like, wait, Carolina said she couldn't hang out with you. Like, wait, why?
This is actually the accurate part of my dream is when my mom's like, okay, wait.
We can solve this. We can solve this. Yeah, she was very much like, we can solve this. So then your mom and I start walking and we're walking down the street and she's kind of like walking me home. And then we walk by this giant wedding, like huge, hundreds of people. It's really crowded. No one's wearing a mask. So your mom and I are both like, oh my God, these people are so crazy. They don't have a mask. They're at this wedding. They're dancing. What are they doing? These people are crazy. Then Denise and I both turn to each other and we're like, oh no, we're also not wearing a mask and we're right next to the wedding. We're less than 6 feet away from the wedding. And then I couldn't find any soap. So
I think we all know what that means.
My question is, why don't you want to hang out with my wolf dog?
I love your wolf dog, Eddie. I always have. He has the eyes of an angel. Just like the Sarah McLachlan song that would play over those PETA ads and those rescue dog ads.
And the arms of an angel
fly away with me. Wow. I can do a good imitation of a really good singer. Like, I can do a really good Norah Jones, which is like, come away with me in the night. But I'm not a good singer. Thank you. I love an anxiety dream. Every time I'm on a plane, if I fall asleep, I have a dream that the plane crashes. And each time I'm so calm. I'm just like, all right, here we go. We're going to crash into Antarctica. My only repetitive dream that I've ever had in my life is me at a party with either Ivanka Trump there or Jared Kushner there, and I'm struggling to get to them to publicly humiliate them to the whole party, and I'm struggling to convince the party that they're terrible. You know, my last Jared Kushner dream, I kept on being like, do you know what he said about blue states? Do you know that he didn't care if we got sick? Hello, is anyone listening to me?
And then they're not, because they're all at a party with no mask on.
Exactly. I also just want to shout out to COVID super spreader weddings. What are people thinking? I'm so sorry. Who needs to get married this badly?
This is such a fascinating thing. It's a fascinating, I know we talked about it months ago, but it's still happening.
Like, but it's gotten even crazier as the numbers have risen.
It's really fascinating. It's a combination of our love will prevail no matter what. And I need to enjoy my life. I need to enjoy my life. But using that as justification for a giant 100-person event
with people of various ages, where 4-year-olds are shaking hands with 90-year-olds.
You're basically saying, I don't care if people die. That's how badly I need to get married. If people die as a direct result of me, I'm obviously not talking about people who have like small things with their families.
There's ways to do it.
People who have adjusted actually to the reality of the situation and done like a small outdoor thing, whatever. But the fucking full-blown Kardashian style huge event with vendors and people who have to work
a buffet.
There. Buffets. It's just sick.
I hope that the Smithsonian gets a video of Kendall Jenner celebrating her birthday party while a masked waiter brings her her cake and leans back as she's blowing out her candles, just as an indicator of where we were at in terms of selfishness in our society.
That's the thing, is that I'm sure people are like, oh, the redneck Trump supporters are spreading COVID. I'm sure that's true also. But the main people I've seen doing egregious stuff with COVID is really rich people who just think nothing applies to them.
Yes. I mean, in terms of weddings, I guess I also just get frustrated with it's like they are thinking of it as you need to take your kids to school. They're like, we're just trying to find the safest way to have all of our family together as we get married. Obviously, it's been hard planning a wedding in the pandemic. And I'm like, great, don't.
Yeah. You also could just not do that.
There's so many people who've had to cancel their weddings and who are so, you know, obviously it's not desirable. But at the same time, it's like, well, I want to have fun and I want to keep my family members alive, don't I? It reminds me of the gender reveal party that burnt down a large portion of California because they did whatever that stupid explosive device is in one of the driest seasons. It reminds me of that in terms of, oh, this small thing that was supposed to celebrate our love or our family is now going to affect hundreds of people.
Yeah.
But that
we had
to
do it.
I have to celebrate my half birthday this year.
Oh my God. What are you going to do?
I don't know. I think a ballroom because I don't really like the sun. So I'm going to have like a ballroom, a buffet, a massive band, an orchestra band, a marching band that goes up
and
down.
You have to have a choir, a gospel choir.
Oh, that's such a good idea. I love people singing all at once together. So yeah, maybe some karaoke, maybe a choir. Anyway, it's going to be an amazing night. Hors d'oeuvres passed around. But it's my half birthday. No, I wish that we were celebrating it under better circumstances, but this is sort of the environment and we're going to do what's best. You know, we're going to have sparkly masks that say like, you know, 30.5 and she's almost there. Stuff like that, that I think will be fun. Mm-hmm. They're only $32. And wear one if you can. I just want everyone to do their best, you know?
But you are going to charge people to wear them, right? Like they have to pay
absolutely.
The $32. Okay.
Well, it costs me a little bit to make them and I'm going to want to see a benefit for that. Right. You know, this is going to be a hard party to put on and I'm not asking for anyone to foot the bill, but I'm just asking for help, you know?
Right.
And if we lose some people because of my half birthday party, no, of course I didn't want that. But what was I going to do? Not have a half birthday party?
Right. I totally agree.
Anyway, everyone is invited. Literally everyone is invited.
How has your week been, Carol?
It's been so great. I was telling Devin I'm addicted to my phone and this is much like alcohol and my eating disorder, a process of my life that will seemingly be impossible to get through, but I think I can slowly detox through my phone. I look at Instagram, I look at Twitter, and I'm waiting for something. I look at things I kind of want but don't really need. And I'm waiting for some spiritual experience out of these things. But like Gia Tolentino says in Trick Mirror, looking at Instagram is like banging your head with a hammer over and over again. And it's taking energy away from me. It feels like relaxing just scrolling on your phone, but it's taking something from me.
Right.
So I want to reengage with the world. I want my 30s to be about seeing others, human-to-human contact, potentially.
That's, you know, what my half birthday is all about.
It's been a problem in relationships in my past where guys have been like, get off your phone.
I know.
And I want to say they're wrong and that I'm right, but they're actually right in those situations. I am on my phone too much. And it's just where I went, you know, I have a little bit of PTSD. And so for a while, my phone was just my safe place to be. Mm-hmm. And now I'm starting to see that the real world is actually worth engaging in. I'm trying to open up my eyes to a reality. What about you?
I mean, I've had that same experience in relationships where people have told me I'm on my phone too much. And then I say, no, I'm not. And then, because I am a naturally defensive person. And then after they say that, I try to stop myself from looking at my phone during conversations, and I realize it's nearly impossible. Similarly to like when I was 20 years old and I was trying to get my life back on track, and I think you were the one who advised me to stop lying about small things. Like just stop lying when you're running late. Like just be honest about why you're running late, or just stop lying and saying you're gonna go to someone's party and then just not showing up. And when you said that, I thought, okay, easy. Obviously, it's going to be easy for me not to lie. I'm not a psychopath. And then throughout the day, it became so obvious how hard it was for me not to lie. I was like, oh my God, the smallest thing comes up and I want to lie. I want to say, the train was stuck under the ground.
I
was stuck under the train. So that's how I feel with my phone, where
your excuse for being late is that you took the subway. The train was stuck under the ground.
I always used to say that, where I would say like, I don't know, not crazy things. Just I always would, my first response would be to like come up with something instead of just saying, I didn't leave my house early enough. I'm so sorry.
That was your strange addiction.
That was my strange addiction. our friend Holly calls TLC's my strange addiction my really extremely bad annoying behavior that I do for attention. But yeah, the phone thing is really hard because then you notice, like when I'm watching a show, I realize, oh, if it's anything more than like a deeply vapid reality show, I can't watch it sometimes because I just want to be on my phone. And if I have to pay attention for a plot, I can't handle it. So
I was watching Law and Order last night without my phone because I was doing a distancing exercise. And as I'm now going to call it. So I was social distancing from my phone and I was watching a Law and Order episode and I was gripped. And I realized, I was like, is this a really good episode, or have I not watched an episode of TV without looking at my phone in so long that this feels like amazing writing?
Yeah.
I was like, they have me. They have my full attention.
No, it's so good. And reality TV obviously is meant to have on while you're on your phone, but something like The Queen's Gambit, people put a lot of effort into making that. And so for me to just be staring at my phone while it's on, I guess, is a little bit disrespectful to the queen.
If Harmon from The Queen's Gambit was real, I would absolutely want her to be on the pod. We are going to be right back with a guest that is so incredible. Devin and I have been talking about her for a week now.
There hasn't been a day that's gone by since this interview that I haven't woken up thinking about this interview. This interview really put into perspective for me how lucky I am to get to do this podcast and meet such incredible people that I never otherwise would have met. So yeah.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back. I want true romance. And we're back with True Romance. Our guest today is a comedy writer, performer, and host. She's the winner of the UK's prestigious Funny Woman Awards, and her stand-up show, To Catch a Dick, that is To Catch a Dick, was nominated for Best Show at the Edinburgh Comedy Awards in 2019. She was the first Black British female to ever be nominated for the award in the festival's history, and her TV credits include BBC, Amazon's Fleabag, ever heard of it, BBC Two's Mock the Week, ITV Two's The Stand-Up Sketch Show, ITV Two's Don't Hate the Players. You can find her comedy series No Filter on YouTube, which is based on her real life dating experiences, which are incredible. And soon you'll be able to watch her opposite David Spade and Fortune Feimster hosting the Netflix After Party, a weekly comedy after show. Please welcome to the podcast, London Hughes.
Hey! Oh my God, that was such welcome. A good intro. First of all, you said my name in British perfectly.
Really?
You said London Hughes with the best British accent I've ever heard an American use since I've been here. So, well done. Thank you so much.
Are people constantly doing the British accent to you?
All the time, and they're doing it terribly. It's so terrible. They think they're doing it really well, and it's like, I'm doing it all right, aren't I? And I'm like, you're not. You're not. And then you just said London Hughes in such a, like, yeah, that was proper. Well done. I'm proud.
I am feeling proper.
Yeah, feeling proper.
I'm full of myself, but I just like doing a British accent.
British people can do American accents really well because we grew up on American TV, but Americans didn't really grow up on British TV, and that's why it's different. And also, your accents are a lot easier than ours, so yeah.
So I was once in Edinburgh. Speaking of Edinburgh, I was once there. I don't drink anymore, and when I was there, I was absolutely drinking.
Oh, yeah.
And I blacked out and came to in a park hanging out with two 15-year-old girls who were also drinking. And
Wait, how old were you at the time?
Oh, I was fully 22 years old.
Okay, cool.
And I was talking to these two like high school girls about New York and Edinburgh, and we were doing each other's accents. And I said, all right, do an American. And they like steeled themselves and they were like, hey, what's up? I'm so cool. I was like, oh, okay. That's actually really good.
Yeah, that's the thing. I can do Valley. I can do Valley girl, and I can do Southern old black woman, and that's it. Like, I can't do New York.
Will you give us both? Will you give us both?
Okay, so like Valley is kind of like this.
Wow.
Like, oh my God. Like, I am London. I am here. I live in LA in Studio City, and this is my life now. I'm a comedian. I'm so funny. This is what I do. That's Valley.
That is
every character on Vanderpump Rules voice.
Yes, thank you. And then my old lady from the South is, hey, ladies, I'm an old woman from the South, and I don't know. I talk like this because I'm from the South, and I've never been to the South personally myself, but this is how I speak. And I did an audition for a role, and I got the part with this accent, and I played an old lady, an old black American lady.
Oh my gosh.
So basically, yeah, they're the two. I want to be able to do New York, but physically, every part of me, I cannot. And I try, and it sounds terrible. But yeah, that's all I can do.
I don't think I can do New York, and I lived there. Or Brooklyn. I live there, too.
Oh, Brooklyn's great. Like, oh, my God. I want to... Oh, so, and I want to do... What's the one that, like... Boston. Oh, my God. That accent is so sexy to me. Like, if a man has a Is it Bostonian? If a man has a Bostonian accent...
I guess so.
Devin,
you would know.
Yeah, my family's from Boston. I think it's just Boston accent. I don't know if it's Bostonian, but... Yeah.
Oh my God. I would smash. Oh,
I know. It is a good one.
I love it.
Once I was in Boston and someone saw me double dip, like I like dipped my chip twice into something, and they were like, you did not just do that.
Oh, I love it. Well, no, people say in America that British accents are sexy, or Italian accents, or basically European accents.
Right.
I feel like that about American accents. Like, I just get moist at an American, like a strong, thick American accent. It does stuff to me. Oh.
I feel that way about Boston, like Long Island, like the thicker the better.
Staten Island.
Yeah. Oh.
Like,
oh,
I just
want
to see a guy from Staten Island in like a white tank top and like a necklace. And like the trashier, the better.
Yes.
I don't know if I could spend the day with him.
No.
I don't want to know his political views.
No.
Outside of that, just for looksies.
Yeah.
I want to make that kind of mistake. And I think that's a really hot, bad decision.
Yeah. Oh, guys, I'm single right now. I'm thinking about like a nice, beautiful Staten Island man right now. it's been too long.
How is your quarantine sex life going? Are you single?
Okay, I'm very much single. Do you know what? At first, I was going a bit crazy because I was like, like, imagine you've just moved to a new town and you just, like, I've moved to a new country. And I'm like, I'm very aware that, like, you know, my accent is aphrodisiac. So I'm thinking, right.
You're going to score.
You know what you have.
I know what I bring to the table, yeah. Okay? And on top of that, like, I'm really fun and nice and sweet and I have my own money and great. So I'm literally all pluses. There is no minus. Also, I also have no gag reflex. Like, life is great. So I'm like, wow. I'm like.
Okay.
You are truly blessed and gifted.
I'm blessed. I bring
some women
so
do have it
table.
All. So some women do have it all.
Yes.
So it's possible.
No, I
okay.
can't cook. I can't cook. I can't okay. cook. That's the only
I
minus.
Can't cook either.
Okay, cool. So that's it. Yeah. I can't cook and that's it. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to just clean up in Los Angeles. Like, let's go. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then lockdown happened and it was like, I can't find guys. I can't go to bars. I can't go to clubs. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. So I got that on the dating apps, but it was just so, I download and delete because it was just hell. It was hell because men got hornier in the pandemic and they were saying right. stuff to you that they would never say to you outside of, like, one guy matched with him on Hinge. I was like, hi. He was like, hi. How are you? How are you? Normal chit chat. And then maybe we didn't speak for like a day. Then the next day he messaged me saying, can you do me a favor? And I was like, yeah, sure. What's up? And he was like, can you send me a picture of your dark brown pussy lips? Because I...
You're like, do you want to ride to the airport?
He said it so, like, matter-of-factly. Like, can you send me a pic?
Like,
Can
you just send me a pic of your dark brown pussy lips, please? And I was just like, pandemic. The pandemic have got these guys acting out of pocket and it's crazy. So I had to delete. I deleted Hinge because it was beneath me. I'm on Raya. Yes. Raya's the worst. Do you not know
the
about
worst.
Raya?
It's the I went worst. On Raya. You see, we all missed the window on Raya. There was a 2-week period on Raya.
Oh, really? When it was good?
When it first was launched, I couldn't get on it. Devin, you couldn't get on it when it was first launched, right?
Sorry, I couldn't get on it. I like made it my life's work to get on it for like a year. And then finally, a coworker, through a friend of a friend,
just put you on it.
Got a friend pass, and she was like, "Okay, I can give you this friend pass." And then I got on it, but then I was gravely disappointed.
Gravely, and it's like queuing up for years to get into the hottest club in town.
Exactly,
and you get in, and the music's terrible, and the people are terrible, and the drinks are overpriced, and no one talks to you. Like, that's what Raya's like. It was just, yeah. And I'm still on it for clout reasons. Like, right. I'm on it because. Anyone who's a someone who's on it, but those guys, I matched with this guy who was a waiter slash DJ, and I'm just right. like, what can you do for me apart from go down on me? What can you really do? And so right. it was just very much like, ugh, it's disappointing.
My sister always describes it as entrepreneur at unemployed.
Yes. Like,
that's everyone's description. 100%.
Oh my God.
Or like that people who are actors will put occupation playing pretend.
Oh yeah.
It's just
like shut up.
Absolutely fuck you. Fuck
exactly.
You.
I was at a bar once in New York with a guy who's really annoying in general, but I was like, oh, what do you do? And he was like, I'm a commercial director, but overall I'm a storyteller. And
oh,
I was like, but overall you're a commercial director, actually.
No.
As it turns out, you direct commercials.
And the thing is, it's so hard, and I'm sure you ladies can relate because, well, we're all badass bitches here, but I feel like when you're a successful woman in any field, it's really hard to get a guy because you can't date guys that are less successful than you because it's weird.
Yes.
But the guys that are more successful, they don't want successful women. They can have anyone.
Right.
So you're a successful woman that can only date successful men, and the successful men you want to date can date anyone. So it's like the pool, the more successful you get as a woman, the smaller your dating pool gets. And mm-hmm. so you're going up against you with all your doctorates or you with your own business are going up against Patty the waitress. And the guys are like, hey, I'll just take Patty. Like, it's so much harder. Like, because for me, that's how I feel. Like, I feel like I can't date a normal guy with a 9-to-5 because it's just, I would never see you. Our lives would clash. I'm getting, like, in England, like, I've been papped on the street. I have fans coming up to me. I'm a thing. And it would be weird if you, like, are a solicitor and, like, your girlfriend is on the red carpet at the BAFTAs, but you can't go because you've got work at 8 the next day. Like, it's just weird. Right. I just feel like it's a clash. And, like, also the stories, like, I'm coming home saying, Kevin Hart flew me to Vegas, and you're telling me Doreen at work bought in a cake. Like, it's not the same level, you know? So, like, a successful woman can only really date successful men, but successful men will just date anyone. And so it's really hard for us. And I don't know if you guys are single in relationships, but I know you're successful. So it's really hard for us. It really is. Yeah,
that is so perfectly put. Like, I've never...
This is a TED Talk. This is a TED Talk that you have to do.
That's exactly what it is. Like, I never thought of it that way. But I did, when listening to your podcast, London Actually, which is on Spotify for anyone who wants to listen, you said something like, I have to date a man who's the Beyonce of his own life.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I love that so much.
All the guys I've dated... I've made more money than. I've never dated a guy that, and I don't even make that much money, but I've never dated a guy that makes more money than me or that's more successful than me. I've dated guys that are trying to be successful, but they're not quite there yet. And that's horrible because you compete with your man. Like, I dated a comedian who wasn't as successful as me at the time. And it was very much like it was just like dick swinging, and I've got a huge dick, so I will swing my dick and he's swinging his tiny dick and I'm swinging it, swinging left, right and center. Like, that's awkward. And then, like, I dated another guy who was just happy with being mediocre, and I'm like, how dare you? Like, you were born a white man, you were born ahead of me by being born. You were born in the lead, and yet somehow you're older than me, you're a white guy, you were born with privilege. And you just stopped. Like, you got your privilege and did nothing with it. Whereas me, born with zero privilege, decided to do comedy. The whitest middle class, upper middle class, Cambridge elite career ever as a black woman. And then I've managed to, like, pass you. And you're looking at me like, oh, you work too hard. Let's just be basic. No. So it's just like, there's always a class. It's hard. When I find the Beyonce, like, my Jay-Z... to my comedy Beyonce, then I'll be fine. But slim pickings. And even in a pandemic, it's even worse. So
I was thinking while I was watching your stand-up about how, first of all, the horror stories I've heard about people dating comedians, and like, how does she, I can only imagine life on the road and doing shows all the time. You must have had the experience of dating comedians. And also, you're genuinely one of the funniest stand-ups I've seen in a really long time.
Thank you.
You're probably funnier than the guys you date.
100%. 100%. All of them. I'm funnier than all of them. 100%. It's hard. It's really hard because they don't realize that they're not funny. They don't realize it. They don't understand it. The thing is, I haven't dated many comedians. I've slept with them all. But I haven't dated them all because, like, I've let them all go down on me. Like, every single British comic has gone down on me.
Right.
But I wouldn't go out with them because a lot of stand-up comics are very horrible. Like, a lot of stand-up comics are the most insecure, narcissistic, arsehole people. Like, they are arsehole people. They're great in bed, but they're arsehole men. And so a lot of the times... it's just kind of like you can't get involved. You can't fall for it. Like, I've had comics that, like, genuinely make you believe that they're in love with you because it's a bit, you know, because they just want to. Like, it's just they're psychopaths. You can't, anyone who wants to, like, go on stage and get strangers to like them as a living has got something wrong with them. I probably got something wrong with me. But a lot of male comics don't realize it. And, I can't. Oh, no. But I've slept with them. I'll sleep with them. I'll sit on their face, but I won't go out with them. But it's hard. My ex-boyfriend...
I'll answer emails while they go down on me.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Like, my ex-boyfriend, he wasn't... I never found him funny. He was an alternative comedian, and he was like... he would do stand-up while standing on, like, a medicine ball and, like, juggling. And, like...
okay.
I'm like, that's great. You're juggling, but the jokes are not funny. Like, if you're going to stand on the medicine ball and juggle and tell jokes, please let the jokes be funny or just be a clown. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, there's, like... and he was just...
right.
He would look at me like my comedy was, like, beneath his. And I'm like, my comedy's actually funny. Like, I actually tell structured jokes. What you do is Cirque du Soleil. So, like, really and truly, like...
you're like, I'm an experimental comedian and that I'm really funny.
Yeah, yeah. That's basically what it is. So we would clash at that. And then, you know, there's an actual like hierarchy in comedy. You've got the ones that are like, I'm really smart. I have intellectual comedy, and you tell right. dick jokes. So, and I'm like, those dick jokes are funny. So like, I don't know what right. to tell y'all. As long as it's funny, it works. But yeah, it's hard. I don't know if I could date a comedian going forward, apart from Pete Davidson. I would.
Oh,
welcome to the club.
I would date him. Yes. And I don't know why I would date him. Because
Me neither. Because he looks sick. He looks unwell.
He looks sick. And I don't know why. I'm attracted to sickness. And he, I feel like he would ruin my life. And I'm here yes. for it. I'm surprisingly
I know.
Here for it.
When I was on Raya... This was a couple years ago. I saw him like there was a news story in the tabloids that was like Pete Davidson's on Raya, and someone had actually sent it to me. And so I saw his profile. I swiped on it so quickly, like swiped yes so quickly that I was like, wait, fuck, I didn't even look at his page. Like I could have read his bio. I could have heard his song. I could have seen more photos that you wouldn't normally get to see.
But you were so happy.
But I swiped so fast that I fucking missed it.
But why do we like him? Why?
It's the Long Island trash thing.
I heard he's got the biggest dick though.
Oh, he definitely has a big dick.
He has big dick energy, as we know. He loves his mom. I think he and Machine Gun Kelly have the same thing,
yes!
which is like this vibe of like who you would lose your virginity to. And then like because you lost your virginity to them, you have like this mind fuck from society that has warped ideas about sex. Like then you're like mind fucked into thinking like I should be in love with this person. I think that's what happens when I look at their photos. I'm like, yes. oh, like they would have like done this to me, and then I would have wanted to fall in love with
him. Yeah, but the thing is, I like Machine Gun Kelly could get it, Pete Davidson could get, and I just don't know why. But is it because he has been like? Because I feel like before Pete Davidson was Pete Davidson, the thing that dated Ariana Grande, I looked at his like trajectory and girlfriends, and his girlfriends obviously after Ariana Grande got considerably more hotter. And considerably more famous. And I was like, is it because he's famous that I'm in? Like, am I shallow? Like, is that what it is? Because if Pete Davidson was just normal Pete Davidson that worked in finance, that lived in Staten Island, that was like, hey, would I give him the time of day? I don't know.
I think you would, because I think it's like the neck tattoos. I think it's the smile. Yeah. I think it's like he comes across as like, I think also like he makes fun of himself in his stand up a lot.
He calls himself trash all the time, which
I
think
that's true.
That is attractive because so many like male comedians are not like that. They come across as like bitter and angry. And that is something that I loved about and love, not past tense, about your stand up is that like it's so joyful watching you and like your energy. Like the jokes are hilarious, and even when they're at like some of these guys' expense, it's so joyful and like in such good nature. I feel like that.
Thanks.
It doesn't come across like some of these male comics that I know.
I feel like they take themselves too seriously. I don't care. It's just jokes, and it's just like I feel like comedy has been. I can't speak for in America because I haven't lived there. I've only lived there since February, but in Britain. Comedy has very much been like very male orientated, but the type of male it is, it's very much like proper, like I'm a intellectual, posh white man, and this is how I feel about the way the world has griped me, and these are how I feel as a man. And then women, when we try and do our jokes, we've been told like it's just women's problems. Like, oh, you're a woman, you're going to talk about periods. You're a woman, you're going to talk about being a mother. And that's not universal. I'm a man and everything I say is universal, but you're a woman. So that's just niche. That's women's stuff. And I think since I would say the past 5 years, because I've been telling dick jokes since 2009. And when I was telling them in 2009, people were like, oh, she's so crass. Like, and I was just talking my truth, living my truth. Like, this is my life. And people were like, oh, she does dick jokes. She talks about sex. She's so crass. That's not funny. It's gag humor. It's cheap. And then what happened was women, we just owned our shit more. And a lot of, I would say people like Cardi B and Nicki Minaj rapping and talking about sucking dick and sitting on faces and like wet ass pussy being like the biggest song in the world. People are like, oh, women can talk about sex and it not be seen as like women's issues or crass. It can be seen as universal, you know? And I think what's happened is people have gotten bored of men just talking about their mundane, average men shit. And they were like, I don't care what this privileged white guy has to say anymore. I've heard it. There's several privileged white guys like him that say the same stuff. What I don't know is what this black British chick who's single right. and has no gag reflex thinks about the government. Like, this is like, like, do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like times have changed and people want to hear different stories now. And it's such an exciting time to be a female comic, honestly. It's great. It's great.
Yeah, I find that, like, when I'm browsing through stuff, I just don't. I'm sure Crashing is an amazing show. I've heard it is, but, like, no offense, I don't want to watch that because I've seen that so many times.
Yeah,
I've seen Ted Lasso so many times.
Yeah.
I've seen, like, all this stuff. I really don't care to see another story about underdog white guy who gets wronged by a woman and then like turns it all around. Like, I actually just have seen that 7 million times.
Mm-hmm. And it's not their fault. It's not their fault because that might be their truth. You know, that white guy is just writing about his truth, or that white woman is just writing about her truth. Like, we've had Sex and the City, we've had Girls. They are, in my opinion, both great shows, but they're the same show. They're the set. Like, I've seen it. I still watched every episode, but I didn't go, I binge watched the whole thing, but I didn't go, you know, this is revolutionary. I went, this is just a current version of something that's already been done. What I'd like to see is, like, how a bunch of Muslim women in New York feel at the fact that they have to have an arranged marriage, but they just want to catch white dick. And now I want to see their story. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I think we've just been fed so much for so long that we're like, what else is out there? Give me more to eat. And I think that's why you're just we're just over bland, unseasoned food. And we just want, like, you know, different flavors and spices. And I think that's what it is. I definitely want it.
You would never describe Pete Davidson as, like, a raunchy comic. Do you know what I mean? Like, you wouldn't describe so many of these guys who talk about, like, Pete Davidson said when someone asked him, what does it mean that you're dating Ariana Grande? He was like, that my dick's always hard. But you wouldn't call him someone who's like, Pete Davidson pushes boundaries.
No. Nope.
Like, raunchy sex comic.
No. Nope.
And I always, a lot of the times dating guys, I would make jokes with them around, and while I was making a joke, I would know, like, in the back of my mind, like, this is gonna bother you. Like, if I'm joking about my sex life, I'd be like,
yeah,
he's gonna think this is gross, but, like, I can't resist making this joke.
I'm with you. I always make funny, dirty jokes, and I know that men find it awkward, and I do it, and I can feel, as it leaves my mouth, I can feel them repulsed by me, but I genuinely don't care. But yeah, now I'm getting, like, guys turned on and thinking that I'm easy. So, for example, they'll be like,
oh, interesting.
You're a comedian. It's like, yeah, what do you joke about? I was like, well, the last show I did was called To Catch a Dick. And then that, in their head, they think, she's easy. I can flirt with her because... Right. And it's like, oh, no, just because I talk about dick jokes doesn't mean that, like, that means that, you know, they'll say something like, oh, so what kind of dicks do you go for? And I'm like, that's none of your business. That's that was not a segue in. That was not an in. Or like, oh, do you like white dicks or black dicks? I don't know.
No.
Oh, just because my show is called To Catch a Dick doesn't mean we can even, like, I'll tell you this story. Literally happened to me a few days ago. I'm buying a car and I was on a test drive. And the guy that on the test drive, he was like, so what do you do? And I said, I'm a comedian. And then he Googled me and saw my stuff. And he was like, what are you doing in LA? And I was telling him about everything in my show, my stand-up comedy show. And I said, yeah, I had a show called To Catch a Dick that did really well at the comedy festival. And he was like, it's called To Catch a Dick. And he was like, I was like, yeah. And then he went, I've never fucked a black girl before. And I was just like, and I went, okay, that's cool. Because I've never fucked a car salesman before. And like,
nice. And like, yes.
But the fact that he thought that, like, because my show was called To Catch a Dick, he could be like, I've never fucked a black girl before. Like, I'm supposed to go, okay, then, do me right now on the 405. Like, shut the fuck up. Like, honestly. Trust me.
It's men. That's
men.
Absolutely horrid. But that brings me to another point, which is just because you're funny and can joke about a sex life doesn't mean that you're not a romantic.
Exactly. Right. Oh, my God, I'm a huge romantic. I'm the biggest. I'm a low-key nerd. Like, I'm that girl. Like, if you would be... Okay, but we're friends now, so I can share this. Okay, so, like...
Please. Oh, my God. I just got chills when you said that, but go ahead.
It's like, yeah, we are friends. Keep going. Don't worry about it. Like, don't overthink it. And, yeah, we are, so it's whatever.
So, like, I've always been a romantic. I didn't lose my virginity until I was 18, which apparently in my neighborhood was, like, old. Like, I was clearly retired when I lost my virginity, like, whoa. But I
was like, should I put flyers up? Like, I'm trying so hard and honestly, it's not happening.
But I wanted the romanticness with the losing of the virginity. And that's because right. I never got the romanticness. I was like, well, I'm keeping my legs closed until a guy pulls up on a boat. We're on the Hudson River with lights. And then like, right. and then takes me for dinner and then I'll fuck him. Like, it was weird. But as a kid, I used to write myself into episodes of my favorite shows as the love interest. So I used to write myself into Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And I played a character called London, and she was Ashley Banks's English teacher, tutor. And I would teach Ashley English. And then me and Will was really into me, and we had like this kind of romance. And it was a three-parter. I was in three episodes. And then in the end, I was in three episodes. And in the end, I had to end it because Ashley's education comes first. But me and Will had this on and off again.
Right.
This on and off again thing. Thank you. And like, I used to write myself into episodes of Frasier, and I would play Frasier's adopted daughter,
That's
Denise.
An interesting choice.
I used to love Frasier. It's the best show with no other race of people in it ever. Like, if you're going to watch a show with solely white people in it through all the 9 series, watch Frasier. Like, Frasier, so actually, you've got what, there's like one black girl that works at the station that comes in sometimes who's Roz's friend. But literally, if you're going to watch a whiter than white show, it has to be Frasier. I love Frasier. So I would play Denise, Frasier's British adopted daughter, and I would help mm-hmm. Frasier get women because I'm British and smart. And mm-hmm. the sons of those women, I would end up dating. So I basically would just put myself in romantic situations in all my favorite TV shows. And the dream of mine when I was a kid was, I must have been about 11 or 12. I don't even know how I knew this, but the dream was to go to, I'd never been to America. I wanted to go to America and film a scene on the fake New York set in LA. And I was like, how did I even know it was fake? Like a fake New York set.
I just found that out like 2 years ago, by the way.
Literally, like 11-year-old me was like, I want to film a scene on the fake New York set in LA. I want to sit on a fake New York stoop and do a scene where I have to kiss a boy at Christmas. Like, that is the dream. And it's still the dream. Anything to do with like romance, Christmas, New York, yes. and a New York stoop.
Yes.
That's the dream. I never have romance in my life. I never have it, but I crave it. I love it. I'm huge romantic. Huge.
I think a rom-com does not have a Christmas scene in it, it just isn't going to work. Like, what's your favorite? I can't watch a rom-com without Christmas.
What's your favorite rom-com of all time?
My favorite rom-com of all time is You've Got Mail.
Oh.
Number one. Number two, 10 Things I Hate About You, which doesn't have a Christmas scene, but it's teen movie genre, so it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, probably The Holiday.
Yeah! I was like, if this chick does not say The Holiday, we are no longer friends. Yeah.
I actually have to say that probably Bridget Jones' Diary is right before The Holiday, okay, and then The Holiday.
Okay, I feel you.
And then Love Actually, which I know is problematic, but I did love it.
No, it's fine. It's fine. They're great choices.
What about you, London?
Mine is The Holiday. Like, nothing compares to The Holiday for me. I can watch The Holiday in Easter. For Hanukkah, I can watch it on my birthday. I can watch it literally. There's not a time when The Holiday does not come on TV that I don't watch it. I am obsessed with that movie, and it just gives me all the feels all the time, no matter how many times I've seen it. It's just the best.
Do you think you're a Cameron Diaz or Kate Winslet in that? I think I'm Kate Winslet, but my God, you're a Cameron Diaz.
I'm Cameron. I'm 100% Cameron. 100%.
You're a career-focused woman.
Career-focused woman who can't cry. When Cameron cries, no, spoiler alert, when Cameron Diaz cries in The Holiday, every single time London Hughes is leaking. Leaking. Absolutely leaking. A hot mess. Like, I literally love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Romantic comedies are the best. They are so good. But there's so many British ones that are problematic because, like, for example, Notting Hill.
Yes.
For those that don't know, Notting Hill, the area, is like the blackest area in London. Like,
oh, really?
every July, they have this thing called Notting Hill Carnival, where there's a Caribbean carnival that takes over the whole area for 2 days, and a million people go to it, and it's a huge street party. And literally, we eat, we dance, we drink, we have jerk chicken, and it's yearly, every July, Notting Hill Carnival. That is the thing. It's been going on in London for like the past 40 years. Like, it's a thing. And Notting Hill, the movie, doesn't even have a black extra in it. Like, literally, so yeah. problematic. I'm like, yo, where are you? It's like when LA movies just wipe the homeless people out of LA. Yeah. It's like, you right. just literally airbrushed all the homelessness out. That's what Richard Curtis, and I know Richard Curtis, he's a friend, and I love him to bits, but there needs to have been some black people in Notting Hill. It's so problematic. Just an extra. Just someone that worked at the bookshop. Just give me a little Keisha right. at the bookstore. Like, where are they? So, yeah. So, a lot of romantic comedies, British ones, wipe out black people. I actually personally was wiped out of a British rom-com. I'm in Bridget Jones Baby. I'm in Bridget Jones Baby.
You're the baby?
I'm the baby. I'm in deleted scene number 3 on the DVD. If you have Bridget Jones Baby, the DVD, go to deleted scenes. Press number 3, you'll see me and Renee Zellweger acting together side by side, and I got cut from the movie. And
I hate that, because that was a really good romantic comedy too.
Mm-hmm. I would have loved to have been in it.
Yeah.
It would have been so much better. And the thing is, they didn't tell me I was cut. So this bitch turned up to the premiere. And I literally, like, me and my boyfriend rocked up, and I'm like, I'm in Bridget Jones's Baby. And I show up, and like, I sit down. And there's a scene in it where, like, her character opens a fridge and she's like, oh, I need some food. And then she goes to the store, and I'm in the store with her, and we have lines together, and we have this funny thing that happens, and it's awkward and it's funny. And I remember watching the movie, and she opened her fridge and was like, I need to go to the store. And I was like, my bib's coming up. And then you just see her walking down the street with shopping bags. And it's like, oh, she's been.
Like, no.
They cut that whole scene out. And it was like 2 days of filming. How many, like 100 extras, me and Renee, and they cut it all from the movie. And I was just like, oh, okay, well, deleted scene number 3. Check it out.
We'll have to get the DVD.
While you're talking about this, I keep thinking, if Devin said, hey, have you heard there is a new romantic comedy Christmas movie and it's London Hughes? I would right. be like, 1,000%, I'm in. You need to be the star of your own Christmas romantic comedy.
I'd love it. And you know what? It sounds so crazy, but it's never been done. There's never been a black British female character starring in any romantic comedy, let alone Britain, let alone America. Right. Like, it just doesn't happen. So for me, yeah, that's what I want to do. I want to be like, you know, the lead in, because if this was a romantic comedy right now, I would be the funny best friend to one of you. That comes right. in and is like, hey, right. girl, this is what you should do. You need to dump yeah. him, okay? And this is what, hey, don't worry about it. Because me and Ray Ray, we went through it too. We had some hard times. But what you need to do, hey, you need to get your act together because you are a queen. Like, that would be
yes.
what
yes.
I would that's be doing.
Yes. Yeah.
And I want to shift that. And, you know, I write and I will be doing movies. And the movies that I do, I will be... hopefully the just the lead, like I can be the funny black British female lead in a rom-com, and that's okay, you know?
So I have to ask, one of the reasons I heard you say that you like love romances, because you were talking on a podcast about how you hated online dating. I feel the exact same way in terms of like, this is not how I want to meet my mate. I want to meet them like in Rome.
I want to meet cute. I want to meet yes. cute.
I want to be cute.
Yeah.
But while you were online dating, what was your bio? What was your opening line if you were DMing first?
I can find it. Let's see. Because I feel like I haven't deleted. Oh, I did. Raya doesn't have a proper bio. My Raya bio is, oh my God, I'm just so funny. Like, that's just a bio.
That's so good.
That's literally my bio on Raya.
Like, they're literally swiping through and they see, like, model from
Colombia. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, I like to live, laugh, love. I eat tons of chicken wings, even though I'm size XX small. And I love football and sunsets. And then they just get to you and it's OMG. I'm just so funny.
That's literally my bio.
they would think it would sound sarcastic, but it's just like absolutely true. Like there's no part of me that's being self-deprecating. This is the thing. I'm actually really funny.
100%. So that's my Raya bio. And my Hinge bio was something along the lines of like, because Hinge, they make you ask questions and stuff.
Right.
They ask you questions and then you have to say something funny. And there was one thing. It's like, what can you teach me? What's one thing you can teach me? And I said, how to cook. The last time I cooked anything, I made a Cornish pasty and it tasted like bricks. I remember that was one of the things. And then men would always be like, how do you know what bricks taste like? Or I like bricks, or you can cook me bricks. And what? I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, so there was that. And then, easy. I know. And then a lot of the times, I feel like I never had Tinder. I've never downloaded Tinder. I just always felt, when Tinder was popping, I was in a relationship. And by the time I broke up, Tinder became really porny. Like Tinder was like where you go to get like scummy, dirty,
to
like
catch a predator.
Yeah. So I was too scared. I never had Tinder, but Hinge. And what's the other one? There must be more.
Bumble.
And my Bumble one was definitely something along the lines of, yes, I'm funnier than you. Yes, I'm British. Don't say pip pip cheerio. That's offensive. Or something like that. like that is literally what men do. Like, oh, you're British. Pip pip cheerio. Right. And I'm like, pip, pip, cheerio. Cheerio means goodbye. So I don't really know what you're saying. Like, pip, pip doesn't mean anything. And cheerio means goodbye. So you're saying nothing and then goodbye to me. So it's weird.
No.
It's weird. But yeah.
This is another thing. And it goes along with the Tinder of it all. There's obviously deal breakers when we're dating people. Like, if a guy doesn't like his mom, or if a guy lies, or if a guy, like, brags a lot, whatever. Those are deal breakers in a relationship. But deal breakers in terms of just meeting people that you want to have sex with. Like, for me, it's like if a guy's wearing a newsboy hat, that's like already
a problem. Wait, what's a newsboy hat?
It's like what Oliver Twist wore.
Brad Pitt wears them sometimes.
Brad Pitt can do it.
Why do men wear those?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why?
For fashion's sake. I don't know. Because they want to hurt me.
Oh. Yeah, that's a deal breaker for me too. 100%. That's a deal breaker.
Didn't know it was, but now it is.
That's a deal breaker.
Our deal breakers, Devin and I would talk about on online dating, was like a shirtless selfie in a mirror, or a selfie, like any sort of selfie face.
Yeah, yeah. Mine is like, if you're pouting, yes, selfie, pouting, trying to look sexy, smizing,
right.
It's a no. If you've got like, if you're holding a snowboard, it's a no. Like, if you're just like, I'm just like, you're too outdoorsy. I'm an indoor person. That's too, you're too much for me. Or if you're like really muscly, oh God, no. Like anything that's like active, if you're bungee jumping or jumping out of planes, nope. Like, yeah, they're all deal breakers. Sex wise, I feel like a deal breaker for me outside of like, you know, online dating, in real life, IRL, a deal breaker for me in the bedroom is if you don't go down on me. Like, if you don't go down.
Huge red flag.
Red flag. Huge red flag. And the thing is, like, I don't understand, like, Chris Rock has got this line, like, where he says that when he meets girls that, like, don't suck dick, and he's like, do they still make you? And it's like, I feel the same about men. Like, I'm like, do they still make you? Like, you like, don't?
Oh, so this is an older model. Okay.
Do you need therapy? You need therapy. Like, what?
Yeah.
What? Like, so yeah, so that's a huge, like, anything else, if you're a Trump supporter, okay, Trump supporter and don't go down on me, they're the two.
They're two huge red flags. Yeah.
Huge red flags.
Also the least masculine things I can imagine. Like, true masculinity to me is a guy who's just like, okay, so I just want to go down on you tonight. Oh, yeah. And that's like all I want to do.
Oh my God. Yes.
I also think when men like don't ask you if you came because they can't like automatically tell. So I'm like, wait, you're just assuming that you like did a good job.
Oh my God, stop. Anytime I go on a date with a guy, if I'm not interested in them, I will just sleep with them. I know that sounds weird. It's probably that opposite.
No, I relate.
But
it's like in recycling. You're like, I don't want to put you to waste.
Yeah, like you're here. I put on clothes. I shave my legs. I mean, if I shave above
the knee. Well, let's not go too far.
Like, I'm just like, I shaved. Let's go. I'm not going to see you again. Let's go. And like that guy, he will get an education from me. Because I'm like, okay, you're making me come. Whereas like a guy that I'm dating or seeing, when you actually care about them as a person and you like their personality, you're a bit more lenient. It's like, okay, you didn't make me come, but it's okay. next right. time. You owe me. You owe me your calm, okay? Because last time you came twice, I came once. I'm keeping score. Like, that's how I am. When you like the guy, it's cute. It's like, oh, you'll get the next. It's like the round of drinks. You'll get the next one.
You're like, okay, can you just like lay down like that? Okay, great. I'm just going to put my leg up right here. All right.
Yeah.
I have to get to work.
Yeah.
Like, I have to go to the office at 10. So, like, we just need to get this done really quickly so I can, like, be relaxed for the rest of the day. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I hate when, like, you get so comfortable, though. Like, I had an ex-boyfriend that was like, we were so comfortable with each other that he turned around and would be like, not tonight. I've got a tummy ache. And I'd be like, I'm sorry. I've dated guys that have told me no. And I'm just like, what? What? How? Like, I never not have sex. Like, I have such a huge libido.
I know,
libido.
No, I'm the same way.
I feel like it all the time. I feel I could be sitting on face right now. You wouldn't even know. I could be having this whole conversation with you. Like, sitting on
that would be iconic.
Oh, I never not feel like it. So when men turn around and they're like, I'm tired, or I've got a tummy ache, which is what my ex used to say, I'd be like, they still make it? Like,
it also reminds me of this Curb Your Enthusiasm episode where Larry David, Cheryl, Larry's wife, is asking, like, why don't you ever try to have sex with me? Like, I'm always the one who initiates sex. Why don't you ever initiate sex? And he's like, oh, because I'm always ready to have sex. Like, he's like, I don't ask because I'm always ready. So you can always just assume that I'm
just
ready.
Just assume.
That's how I feel.
And I was like, I was literally like 17 watching it. And I was like, oh, so that's me. Like,
Yeah. Just always assume that. Always assume. I've never turned down sex. Nope.
Wait, so one of Devin and I were talking, one of our favorite things about you is your distaste for public transportation.
Oh, yeah. It's beneath me. It's very much beneath me in every way, shape, and form.
Devin and I. Okay, so one of your celeb crushes, Adam Driver's across town, but you have to take the bus to get there.
It's just not happening. There's no way. It's not me, the bus. Never in your life. Never. It's not happening. It's not. I'll walk to him.
I will walk. Thinking about how when I lived in New York, I was living in a literal closet by the end. No windows, like a small room. I was paying like $400 a month to live in this tiny apartment in New York. I was taking taxis like I was being paid to. Like, I literally was spending more on cabs than I was on rent. Yeah. All my money was going, because I was just like, I just can't do the subway. Like, my soul is already battered.
I can't. No. The thing is, like, in America, because I saw a bus in LA and I said to my manager, have you ever taken the bus? And she was like, yeah, I used to take it all the time back when I was a kid. And I was like, okay. Maybe I'll do it one day, like as an excursion. And she was like, London, it's not an excursion. It's not Disneyland. Like, I'm like, let's see. I'm like, you know, like when people go backpacking and they just want to like go hiking or go around the old cathedrals. I'm like, let me take an LA bus. Like, it's exciting for me. But like, personally, to do it for a reason to go somewhere, no. To do it as a trip, like a learning trip or a cultural trip, yes. Right. But yeah, no, buses, all public transport are beneath me. I'm bustrophobic. I tell that to every guy. I'm like, I am bustrophobic. I do not do them. They are beneath me. It's a huge...
I want to watch a movie that's like Reese Witherspoon in that movie Wild, but it's you taking like having like a terrible experience and then taking the bus to like try to emotionally recover.
Yeah, no, I just can't. I don't know why. And it's the thing, I drive in the UK. I've been learning to drive in LA, but oh my God, American drivers are the worst in the world. They are.
Yes.
LA drivers are terrible.
They're very bad.
I don't understand how the freeway is like, Jesus Christ. Like, I feel like I need therapy. I had like 12 hours of driving lessons and I was like on the freeway, like, oh my God, like there are no rules. Like, people don't care. I'm just like, I don't know if I can do this, but I'm gonna get a car, I'm gonna drive, I'm gonna be brave. But maybe, who knows, I might have to start taking the bus if I'm too scared to drive in America. Like, I might have to get
you'll be able to do it. You'll be fine.
Ugh. It's crazy. But no, it's beneath me. It should be beneath everyone. Look, guys, don't take the bus for your mental health.
I want there to be like a really sexy train system in the United States that's like old movies where you can go on the train. There's like really like across the country. You like meet
like
a lover.
Like in Some Like It Hot, like the Marilyn Monroe thing. Exactly. I want that train. Yeah. I'd go on those trains if they were a thing. That's like, I'm here for it. If Marilyn Monroe had a little party and there'd be jazz players on the train and we could eat and sleep and it'd be cute, I'd do that. But yeah, no, it's beneath me.
Right, I'm going to write myself, like you used to write yourself in TV shows, I'm going to write myself into a train love story where we're both getting ready to go in our separate compartments, but then we run into each other in the hallway, and then the train, like, is hitting tracks, and so we're bumping into each other, and then, you know, we eventually...
Then can you turn it into, like, Speed, where there's a bomb on the train?
Yes!
When there's a bomb on the train. You've got to defuse it with this love interest. Otherwise, everyone dies.
That is the movie. You gave us a conflict.
We are genius.
We have to not put this episode out because there's so many good ideas in it. We have to save it for ourselves.
Jesus Christ. We're so talented.
I know. It's actually ridiculous. And this actually brings me to something that I loved so much. And you put it into words, and it's something that I've felt before. And that's that you said your career is your boyfriend.
Yeah.
And I was talking to someone about it, and I was like, you know, growing up, I thought I was always thinking about like when I get married one day, when I have kids one day, when I meet this guy and all these romantic moments. And then when I started my career, I was like, oh no, this is the thing I care about the most. And if I had to choose between the two, it would definitely be my career, and not in a sad way either. I would just be like, this is the thing.
But people will make you feel like that way of thinking is sad. Like, they'll be like, oh, your career is you're using your career as a crux because you're lonely or single. And and it's like, no. Do you know what makes me calm? Oscars. Not Oscar.
Yeah.
Oscars. They make me calm. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's what I want. It's sad. Because men don't have to do that. Men never sit around with their friends and go, oh, I'm going to have to choose between, like, being a successful CEO or settling down. They can do both, but for some reason, women have been taught that we can't, and it's even my mom, like, God bless her, she's amazing, but, like, I ring her all the time to tell her what I'm doing in America. Like, I literally will ring her and be like, Mom, like, I've just sold this movie, or Mom, I've just got this job, or I got this, and she'll be like, that's lovely, but what about a B-O-Y-F-R-I-N-I-E-N-D?
Oh, my God.
And I'll be like, Mom, I'm dyslexic. Like, I can't spell. What did you say?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Start from the top and do it again.
Yeah, like, she literally, I could tell her I have got 7 Oscars. I can tell her I've bridged the gap between African Americans and Americans, and now they're like, there's peace in America thanks to my comedy. And she'd be like, but where is your boyfriend? Like, and it's so crazy.
But you did it single, didn't you?
Like, you did all that, but where's your man? Like, and she's got grandkids, and they're from my brothers, and she'll literally say to me, the happiest day of her life will be when I have kids. And I'm just like, why though? Like, ew, and I may not have them, babe, so I don't know what to tell you. But, like, it's just so weird that we put so much onus on that. And I told my mum when I was 7, I don't want any kids until I have a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, until I have a waxwork in Madame Tussauds. They were the two things. I was like, once I've got that, I can say, okay, maybe I can settle down. And she thought I was joking, but now it's like, maybe I was serious, because I'm not slowing down for no man. No. I think it's the best way to be. It's healthy.
Yeah. I think that we need men who want to take care of us while we're pursuing our dreams.
100%.
And I think that that's something that men have had, and Devin talks about it a lot. Like, that's why they're so ahead of us in a lot of ways, is because they've had, like,
women that do that for them.
Yeah, and they don't have to worry about getting their shirts dry cleaned or like what they're gonna have for dinner. Like
they have assistants.
They have assistants, and I need an assistant. Like I need someone who's like, oh my God, how was your day? Okay, that sounds really stressful. Are you hungry?
Yeah.
Like, that sounds so good.
Oh my God, I'd love that. I want that, but also he also needs to be like doing well. And it's so hard because he needs to be my assistant. But also he needs to have his own business and be doing successful work, because otherwise he'll be a house husband, and like, I I don't know if I could do that. I don't know if I could be like, right. I come home and I make all the money and then you spend it and look after the dogs. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, it's sexy to just meet someone who's interested in like what they're doing too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Having ambition and caring about something like your career as a man is sexy to me. If a man came home and was like, I'm doing really well in this and I'm excited about this, I'm like, oh, wow, that's great. I'm here for it. It's hard. It's good. Who knows? I reckon I'm trying to think who my next man will be. Like, I feel like I couldn't go out with Pete Davidson. I reckon we would just end up fucking. Like, I don't know if he's a baby. Like, I'm 31.
That's what he's there for.
Yeah. He's just a smash and dash, I think. Yeah. I don't know. But if not him, who?
But it's just him and that's it. So who?
Like, I like Michael Cera. I reckon.
Okay.
I reckon.
Oh, but this is interesting. Okay. I used to like Michael Cera, but I would like smother him, like, but not with emotion, like physically.
Yeah. He's just like a rake of a man. Like, he's very.
Yeah.
Like, I was still smashed. It's hard. I like Shia LaBeouf. Shia LaBeouf is the dream.
Oh, yes. Shia LaBeouf in leggings.
Oh, my God. Oh. Shia.
There's a great Instagram account called Shia's Outfits that I follow.
I will follow. Oh. I heard that Shia like literally makes you fall in love with him though. Like if you're acting in a role with Shia, he's so method that if the character is a love interest and he's acting opposite the girl, he will make the girl feel like they are in a real life relationship for 3 months or however long the movie's filmed.
Gosh.
And guys, we are looking for someone for our love interest in our rom-com.
Yes.
And Shia, if you're listening, take the job seriously.
Shia, I'm going to need you to take the job seriously and date me solidly for 3 months and go down on me in between takes. And then that would be method. Oh, I love him.
Okay, so we get a lot of advice questions about how to keep sex and intimacy alive in a long-term relationship.
Ooh, I've got a great one. Yes. Oh my God. This is the best idea ever. Okay. So.
I'm already excited.
You're going to love it. So to keep sex alive in a long-term relationship, what you should do is a thing called Sex Week. Now, you know, like Shark Week is a thing. Mm-hmm. And then like that week is dedicated to different sharks and whatever. You have Sex Week. And for different days, you have different sexual things. So, like, Mondays, sex in the living room. Tuesdays, sex in the kitchen. Wednesdays, sex toys. Thursdays, sex with other people watching. Friday, sex in public. Like, that's what you do. So, you should have sex with... So, my friend, I call her the guru. Her name's Francesca Hoagie. And she has been with her boyfriend for years. And they have sex week. And it's... like, she'll be like, Han, I can't talk right now. It's... call me next week, it's sex week. And I'm like, oh my God, yes, what happened this week? And like, she's like, I'm buying toys, it's sex week. I've got to get this new toy. Like, and they have sex week about once every 5 months. And so sex week, and it's worked wonders. So yes, sex week.
That is brilliant.
That is brilliant advice. It sounds like sex week becomes like Christmas where she's like, okay, I'm stressed. It's sex week. I've got to get the toys.
I've got a book.
There's a big sale at House of Pleasure.
Thursday, we're doing hotel sex. So I'm booking the Radisson, like literally sex week. And every time they do a sex week, it gets bigger and bigger, this time with more sex. So literally sex week. When she told me about it, I was like, I can't wait to have a boyfriend so that I can do sex week. And I haven't been able to have one for long enough to do it. But yeah, sex week is what I recommend. Report back on sex week.
It just reminds me of a time when I was going to a restaurant with a guy and I was like, oh, so do you want to have sex in the bathroom when we get there? And he was like, absolutely not. It's 6 p.m.
My best public sex story I've ever had. And I've never told this story publicly ever, but yeah, basically the first time I went to Vegas, I was 23 and I went to Vegas with the wrong people. I went to Vegas with the type of girls that just wanted to stay indoors and watch Kardashians, and I was like, I'm in Las Vegas. Like, we are not being in bed by 10. It's Las Vegas. Right. So we go for dinner, we go to one bar, then they'd want to go home. So I stayed out by myself. And I don't know where I got this bravery to just walk the streets of Las Vegas by myself, but I did. And I was just like, I'm going out. And because I'm British, being British, you can get places and get into clubs that you never could, like, not being British. No offense, Americans. I've got that over you. So I was using my Britishness to get me into clubs. I would walk straight to the front and be like, I used to grab a girl from the line and tell her not to say anything. And I would go to the bouncer and say, hi, so I'm here with Princess Anne. And I'd point to the girl and be like, okay, so we're here. Princess Anne's here. She doesn't line up. Do you want us to go to another club, or we've got detail outside? I don't know what. And they'd be like, oh, wow. No, come on in. Like, I do that all the time.
Brilliant.
You should have gotten someone's grandmother and been like, I'm here with Margaret Thatcher.
This is Margaret Thatcher. We need to get in.
She doesn't wait online.
She doesn't. So literally, I'd grab a white girl and pretend they were like, I'd make up Princess Eugenie. I'd make up these princesses and get in clubs. So I had a great night out. And it was like 4 a.m. and I've been partying with all these new white girlfriends I just made. And they walked me to my hotel, and I was staying in the Planet Hollywood. And I had to walk through Planet Hollywood to get to my room. And there's a casino there. So I'm walking through the casino drunk as a skunk. And there's gambling going on because it's Vegas. And this guy was doing a roulette table. And I don't really gamble. I don't really know what it is or how to play roulette. But I just know what you're supposed to say and do. So I said something like, pull it on 22 black or whatever. I said a number and I said black, right? And then he did, as like shits and giggles. He did it for a joke, but he won $300. So by the time I like left, like walked out of the casino and headed towards the lift, sorry, the elevator, he caught up with me and he was like, oh my God, like I won $300 because of you. Like, how can I repay you? And I went quick as a flash, you can let me sit on your face. And he was like, paused and then went, okay. So like we went behind this roulette table and like he laid down on his back and I was wearing a dress and one of those tight dresses where you can't wear underwear with it because you get serious.
It will show,
so I luckily didn't have any underwear on. So I just crouched over his head and I was just bobbing up. And
that's iconic.
Sitting on his face behind the roulette table. It was 4 a.m. There was no one around. And so I was chilling, living my best life. All of a sudden, I felt two arms just lift me up from his face. And I was like, oh my God, but it's Vegas. And they were like, we don't do that type of thing here, ma'am. And I was like, but
what about the movies?
Yeah, but
and like, the reality shows.
Yeah. And I like, they put me in like fake prison. And I was sitting in fake prison and I was like, I'm so sorry. I turned into Papa Mary Poppins. I was like, I'm really sorry, officer. I had no idea that you can't do that here. Because I thought what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. And I just thought, you know, it's Vegas. I'm so sorry. And they were like, that's lewd behavior. You know, that's a crime. And I was like, I'm so sorry. And they let me off and it was fine. Like,
wow. Well,
apparently I'm banned from Planet Hollywood, but I've been back since.
Quote unquote. Banned.
Quote unquote, air quotes, banned from Planet Hollywood. So yeah,
that
so
is your next legend bio, by the way, is banned from Planet Hollywood. What you have, your podcast is on Spotify.
Can you tell us more about the Netflix after show you have coming up?
Yeah, so basically there's a show coming out on Netflix in January and it's called the Netflix After Party. And it's such a fun idea for a show. So imagine like you've watched Netflix, you've binge watched your favorite series, and then this is what I do personally. Maybe I'm weird, but I then go on Twitter and I type in the hashtag to see what people say about it. Imagine you don't have to do that. You just watch Netflix After Party hosted by me, David Spade, and Fortune Theme Star. And we actually talk about your favorite shows. We have the stars from the shows in it. And then we do sketches and games, and it's fun and it's rude and it's hilarious. And that's basically what it is, the Netflix After Party.
I love both those comics so much too.
It's so genius. It's one of those things that I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe we lived without that before. Like,
yeah.
I can't wait to have that.
I'm just so obsessed because it's going to be on every Sunday. It's weekly. So like you'll binge watch your shows and you just watch Netflix After Party and just have fun and just see what everyone else thought of the show and what we think and what the guests think. And we're always joined by another funny comedian, and we'll have the stars from the show coming through and game sketch. It's just going to be a whole lot of fun. I am so chuffed that I get to be part of it because it doesn't feel like work, you know? It's just like, oh, I get to do this. I get paid. Wicked. God bless America. Amazing.
And you'll be one of the main reason that we and so many women are going to be watching it. So
yay!
I'm very excited.
I'm super excited.
Also, I just want to say now all we need is for Pete Davidson to have a Netflix series. Then he'll come on the show as a guest.
Oh my God, stop. Don't, because that's, oh, don't.
That's
because,
just math. That's just
that's
math.
Just like, that's just it math just equation. Makes sense. Like,
it just
he
makes
will come
sense
on the show. And then I, but when he comes on the show, do I play it cool? Or do I, am I like, by the way, like, I want to fuck you? Or am I like,
no, just tell him. Yeah. I think women should always make the first move because men are always scared. And once you make the first move, then it comes to light that they're like, oh, yeah, like you said, like that guy was like, yeah, I do want you to sit on my face. Like,
yeah,
they will most often be like that, but you just have to put it out there.
I'm just going to, I'm putting out there, I'm manifesting Pete Davidson. I feel like, when I was, before I was like on TV in the UK or whatever, I genuinely was like, I'll know I'm famous when, and I'll be able to buy myself a Cartier love bracelet. And that was like my thing, because all the Kardashians had them, and I was like, yeah, one day I'm going to be able to, they're like $7,000. I'm like, one day I'm going to be able to afford a Cartier love bracelet, and I can afford that now. That's fine. So my new thing is, I'll know I'm successful when Pete Davidson goes down on me. Like, that is the level I want to be. Pete Davidson go down on me famous. And that is,
wow. That is a quote for the ages.
Do you guys do like The Secret and you write like all the things you want from the year? That's what
your
I'm adding
board
that. Yeah, my vision board.
Yeah, let's
Pete
vision
Davidson
board it
is on the vision board. Okay, cool. I'll let you know if I do it. How long are you giving me to fuck Pete Davidson? A year? 2 years?
Yeah. I think you can do it in a year.
A year.
A year.
You can do it in a year.
All right. A year. I love how we're talking about it.
I know. I love that we're like just planning it out as we would our shooting schedule.
Yeah. A year. I've got to give myself a year to get with Pete.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, in a year, we also have the holiday season, and that's a great.
That's true.
Time to release
our Pete, a Pete at Christmas.
A Christmas
Pete.
A Pete at Christmas.
A Christmas
a very Pete.
Pete
Christmas.
A very Pete Christmas.
And then we can also listen to London on her podcast on Spotify. It's called
yes
London Actually. And Devin and I are already listeners. So
yay,
please join us.
Yes. Yeah, if you like your podcast with a bit of honesty. I feel like I'm too honest on that podcast. I'm literally like,
no,
this is my sex life. This is my love life. This is how I feel.
It's so good.
It's so good. It's so refreshing. It's just needed. It really is.
Thanks, babes. I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
I'm genuinely a fan. I'm so excited. While interviewing you today, I kept on thinking, we're going to look back in a year and tell people that we interviewed London.
I know. I can't stop thinking that, too.
Imagine.
It's going to be so crazy.
No, we'll be friends by then. Don't look back. You'll look into your phone to text me and be like, we're friends.
Oh, my God.
Are you crazy? You lot are badasses. I'm honored. Don't you
what?
After this, I'll give you my number. What? We're friends, please.
Oh, my God.
I told you my Vegas story. This is real. Okay? We're friends now, whether you like it or not.
This
How
is the best day
you
of my life.
How dare you
okay
look back in this? No. We'll be friends.
We're looking forward only.
Yeah, look forward to our friendship. Where are you? So you're in New York. And
yeah, I'm in LA.
You both, and you're in LA. Okay, so we can make this happen.
Yeah,
we're
this
making
is doable.
100%.
This is
doable.
FaceTime
okay,
me in.
Great. Okay, great. Amazing.
All right.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thank you, London.
Thank you for joining us, London.
No worries.
Okay, we're going to take another quick break, and then we'll be back with True Romance.
I want true romance.
And we're back with True Romance. That was London Hughes. I feel like London is Christmas and New Year's Eve and Valentine's Day and Mardi Gras and President's Day.
And International Cupcake Day that people celebrate on Instagram
yes
by posting a
yes
picture.
Yes, I get so much inspiration from how well London knows herself. And I want to know myself that well. Like, she just knows what she's too good for. And she just says simple stuff like, that's beneath me. Raya is beneath me, which I really want on a t-shirt. Raya is beneath me.
I also feel like we are just going to look back on this in a year and she's going to be a megastar. And we're going to be like, wow, I can't believe that London Hughes was on our episode about the same episode where we talked about menial things like my dreams of Carolina.
People are going to dig up this interview for more important interviews. And I'm completely fine with that. London was a joy. I feel better from having a conversation with her. I believe more in the spirit of Christmas, and
I believe more in life, in humanity, in everything. She is the fucking best.
I just can't wait for girls around the world to find her.
Yeah.
It's going to be Christmas morning. That's one of my favorite lines from Mr. and Mrs. Smith, when Brad Pitt calls Angelina Jolie and he says, "What did you think the first time you saw me?" And they're like racing to the house to kill each other because they're both assassins. And she goes, "You first." And he goes, "I thought you looked like Christmas morning." And I was like, if a guy said that to me, I would kiss him with tongue. And he would see me in my bra and underwear.
I don't like to speak of traitors. I don't like to speak of toxic traitors.
Devin holds a grudge against celebrities like I've never seen before.
I hate toxic traitors. Is there something wrong with that?
I forgive Brad.
I don't.
Is that okay?
Listen, I know you know that when we saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which I hate, speaking of toxic traitor, that whole movie is a traitor to me because I lost so many fucking hours of my life watching that stupid piece of shit. But I know you know that I had an involuntary response to the Brad Pitt shirtless scene where I was like, I don't want to feel this.
Brad Pitt took off his shirt in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and Devin put her head in her hands and went...
Because I was like, this is a toxic traitor and I don't want to give any time to toxic traitors that they don't deserve.
It was so great. I have come around to that movie in different ways, but I understand. It was not... Inglourious Basterds is the best Quentin Tarantino movie and it's his most compassionate. Please come at me in the comments.
I don't get what the whole hubbub is about.
He's really in defeat. He's openly in defeat. And he flaunts that in his movies, if you see it. He has a foot fetish, so there's always, like, bare feet or girls' feet in movies.
Right. No, I know that he completely fetishizes women's bodies and makes that a central point of all of his films. Yeah, I did know that. And then we normalize it by nominating him for every award ever. Yeah, I did know that.
So, like I said, Devin holds grudges, and we love that about her. Because you know that if anyone ever crosses you, Devin will never forgive them. And it's a really nice thing to know.
That's true. But also, like, if my friends do anything, I feel like I'm like, okay, I understand in the moment that, like, had to happen. But if their boyfriend did the same thing, I'm like, okay, just be fucking careful.
Devin, I did a hit and run. And she's like, okay, well, obviously, like, you were probably in a weird space that day. The holidays are stressful for everyone.
And then someone's like, oh, my boyfriend, I saw he liked a girl he works with's Instagram. And I'm like, oh, what? Okay. Oh, my God. How did he apologize?
What are we going to do?
How did he apologize? Sorry.
Thank you, as always, for tuning into True Romance. We love our listeners so much.
We love you.
I love you.
Love you, Carol. Oh.